We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program Caregiver Dave to Sandy. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic as well. And our guest today is a very famous director and creator, Kim Bass. And he's going to talk about Tyson's Run and much, much more. Kim, thanks for stopping by. How are you?
Hey, thank you for having me, and I'm doing just fine. It's opening day for my film, Tyson's Run, nationwide, so I'm having a good day.
It definitely seems like a good day. It's a great story, but let's start out. Did you always want to be a director, creator, things like that growing up when you were a kid?
I always wanted to be a storyteller and be a filmmaker, even though at the time I was so young, I didn't exactly know what that was. My grandfather took me to my first film when I was 7 years old. We actually got on a city bus and drove out of our neighborhood and went to a kind of a nicer neighborhood to a theater called the Uptown Theater in Utica, New York, which is in upstate New York. And I watched my first movie, which was a Disney film titled Miracle of the White Stallions. And I was so impacted by the experience that when I got home that evening, I told my mother that I wanted to do that, and who makes movies? And she told me it was done in a place far away called Hollywood by some people there. And I said to my mother, I said, I think they're the magic people. And when I grow up, I'm going to be one of the magic people.
That's great.
We're talking about Mike Tyson, right?
Not exactly.
So when you think about things, Kim, In so many ways, getting your dreams to come true, where do you think that process started after you said, this is what I want to do? How did that process start and continue? Tell us.
Well, truth be told, I've always been sort of a kid who focused on things obsessively, and it's something I just wanted to do. And I was fortunate enough to have loved ones around me who encouraged me, and more specifically, my mother. She said, not only is that what you want to do, she goes, it's exactly what you're going to do. And you need to believe that and move forward toward that goal. And she told me that when I was 7 years old. And so the thought of being a filmmaker or being a storyteller, being in the business, never, ever left my head. And so I give my mom a lot of credit, but certainly a lot of those around me who also encouraged me and supported me as I just sort of put one foot in front of the other, always staying focused on that goal.
Yeah. All right. So tell us about Tyson's story.
Tyson's Run, Dave. I want to jump a little bit before I get that. Let's get continuing about this. So where do you think that big break came? And talk a little bit about the whole big break process. So you started working hard and the opportunities came. What do you think were the things that got you the opportunities to create these amazing shows that really just made your career such a success?
Well, the first break that I had, so to speak, was actually in Japan, where I was living and studying martial arts and teaching at a private language college, teaching English conversation. And I met a man named Junichi Takahashi, who was an agent and a producer, who had me audition for a television show. And I actually got the gig, and I ended up on a Japanese television show. And then I did other shows and got into movies there and stage. And so at that point, I was actually either on stage or on camera. And I thought, you know, maybe that would get me back to the States where I could do acting work here in Hollywood. And I ended up in a movie with Jackie Chan called The Protector. And after that, I decided to move back to the United States thinking, okay, the door is open. I'm going to come back to the US after being in Japan for 5 years and having done a movie with Jackie Chan, all's going to be well. Well, the problem is I'm not a good actor. As a matter of fact, I'm terrible at it. So that wasn't going to work out too well. And I turned my attention to writing, thinking that perhaps I could write something that I could be in, since no one would really cast me in anything. And I wrote my first screenplay, finished it on a Thursday, gave it to a producer on a Friday, and ended up optioning that screenplay to a production company on Tuesday. And that began my writing career.
Wow. And you know, when you talk about the writing career, in so many ways. And it's something that you figured out your stuff. You figured out your secret sauce. You liked the industry. You loved the acting business. It wasn't acting. So what do you think makes you such a really good writer and creator?
Well, I don't know if I label myself as a really good writer, but I like to write stories, and I've stumbled my way into some modest degree of success, I suppose. But I liked telling stories even when I was a kid. You know, I grew up in a house with a brother and four sisters who are all very funny, who are all very creative. So, you know, we would entertain, you know, each other. As a matter of fact, it's funny that I'm the one who's quote unquote the filmmaker in the family, because we got our first little Super 8 camera when we were all very young. And for Christmas, I fell asleep. And when I woke up, my brothers and sisters had made a movie, which I got to watch, called Christmas Rally. And so they always played with the camera. I never actually touched it much, but I always, again, wanted to be a filmmaker. But it was always my burning desire to, you know, put something on the big screen and have that same experience I had that first time when my grandfather took me to
the... So when you optioned your first writing deal, what was the show that you ended up doing first writing?
Well, that was a screenplay, and it was entitled Popsicle Soldiers, an action piece. And it was actually optioned three times. And so that sort of started to prime the pump, certainly financially, where I could, you know, pay my rent and stay in Hollywood. And while that was under option, I ended up being introduced to Damon Wayans from In Living Color fame, and my wife and kids. And we began a relationship. And soon after meeting him, I ended up writing two sketches for him to perform on, not necessarily the news, the HBO show. And then from that, we did a music video for Motown. And soon after that, I was in the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop with a writing partner, Donald Lamoureux. And while being in that Warner Brothers Writers Workshop for sitcoms, I got the call from In Living Color to come and pitch. I pitched, and next thing you know, I'm a staff writer on In Living Color, nominated for an Emmy, and we did, you know, some pretty good work over there, and for two seasons. And once that was over, I was offered an overall deal at Fox Television at the studio level, and did some work there on a show called True Colors, which was under my deal.
Okay.
And I created Sister Sister, and then created Kenan and Kel, and it all, the ball just started rolling.
So, you know, meeting, you said Damon, is that who?
Yes. Yeah, Damon Wayans, yes.
How did that story of meeting, because you know how this industry works. It's all about this specific meeting. We all have talent. It's just meeting the right person, right place, right time. How did that develop that you got to meet him?
Well, I optioned my screenplay, as I said, to a producer, and that producer was an acquaintance of Damon's manager, Eric Gold, at the time. And apparently he had a conversation, just, you know, found this new writer. He wrote a terrific script. We just optioned it. We intend to make this movie. And he said, really? And I got a call and saying, hey, well, maybe he's got some other good ideas. And Damon read the script and then wanted to talk to me about a film he was writing, a screenplay that he was writing. So he actually asked for the meeting. And once we met, we, you know, got along, and the rest as it.
And then being part of In Living Color, that's got to be amazing, right? How many superstars did you run into in In Living Color?
Well, you know, it's we had some talented folks. I mean, Damon was there, Jim Carrey, of course.
Yeah.
J-Lo and Tommy Davidson, yeah. And you know, we just had so many folks who came through there, Jamie Foxx, and sometimes Whoopi Goldberg came on to guest star, and so we had a pretty good time. You know, Bruce Willis came to the set because he was getting ready to do a movie with Damon, so it was interesting. You know, people think comedy's easy. It's a lot of hard work, and the show, the exec producer of the show, of course, was Damon's brother, Kenan.
Yeah,
and you know, he ran a pretty tight ship, and we, you know, we had a lot of fun writing a lot of good things with a lot of good writers on the show. So I was just fortunate to be among them.
One of the best comedy things that really changed comedy in so many ways. And it really brought, I guess, the suburban to urban. That's In Living Color. with phones.
That was a good way to put it. That's absolutely right.
I mean, because I mean, I grew up and I'm like, wow. And then you just really said, never thought of these different things. And Fox shows developed. I interviewed the voice of Bart Simpson, Nancy Cartwright, a couple months ago. And just think about that Fox team. Wow. You know, of the shows on Fox.
Yeah, a lot of
Married with Children and Living Color, The Simpsons, and then what the shows you developed after. I mean, it's just like that Fox time was just a special time because it changed television. And I wish that they show more of that, right? Give a little bit more of a highlight how it changed television.
Yeah, it was, well, they took a chance on a lot of things that some of the other networks weren't taking chances on. And so it paid off and it was a good breeding ground for many of us. So I appreciate, you know, that experience.
Absolutely. All right, Dave. So we're back to you in this. So basically, I am a huge fan of In Living Color. He created other shows. We're going to get into Tyson's Run because I love the whole story of autism because I am a former educator that worked in the autism community. So I'm really excited about talking more about that. But I'm going to pass it back to you, Dave, for any other questions you have for Kim, and then we'll get into Tyson's Run.
Well, you're very successful, obviously. And some people believe that success is a lot of hard work. Some people think it's just being in the right place at the right time. Some people think it's a combination of the two. What do you attribute your success to? And have you exceeded your goals and expectations of where you would be at this age?
Well, I think it is a combination of both. You have to be opportunities, I believe, are surrounding people all the time. But you have to be prepared to take advantage of the opportunities when they avail themselves to you. So, and being prepared means having done the work. So that you walk in the door, you know, ready to go. You got to be able to hit the ground running because, you know, the entertainment business, you know, that second word business is sort of the powerful part, right? And you got to be ready to do some business. And I feel that you meet some good people, but you got to bring something that is valuable to the process. And I've been fortunate enough to meet some really good people and get some help along the way. But I feel that I've had some maybe not great ideas, but some good ideas that others saw value in. And therefore, the opportunities were sort of presented to me. And then, but you got to be ready to, like I said, to go right through that door when it opens.
Now, the story of Tyson's Run, you're the director. Did you write this as well, Tyson's Run, or just direct?
I did. I wrote the screenplay, directed it, and I'm one of the
people.
Okay, so tell us how you came up with the story for this.
So I was, one morning I was at my son's elementary school, and there was a young boy who sort of lagged behind when the other boys dashed off running across the, you know, the field at the school. And I asked him why he didn't keep running, and he said that he said, I know I'm fast, but all the other boys are super fast. And so he said he didn't like to run anymore because he always felt left behind. He felt dejected. He felt a distance from the other kids. And so that touched me. And that started to percolate in my mind. And then as time went on, I started looking at what was going on in society where everyone's fighting for their rights, to be included, to not be discriminated against. And so that nugget of an idea grew into what now is Tyson's Run.
And so the talking about connecting autism to this, was that story, how's that bring the autism community into this as well?
Well, I have friends who have some children who are on the spectrum. And I had a sort of a firsthand view at sort of the challenges that they were going through and their concerns about whether or not their children would be included in society and how they would be treated at school. And so I thought that autism itself would be a vehicle that I could utilize to tell a more universal story because it's so prevalent in society and the parents feel so challenged and sometimes feel so on their own, separate from other folks in society. And so I thought that would be a good vehicle by which we could explore inclusion, explore acceptance, explore determination and forgiveness and the family dynamics.
You know, I have a grandson who's on the spectrum. He's Asperger's, and unfortunately, not a good story with him. He got involved with the wrong kids at you know, the age of teenagehood, and he's in prison right now, you know, serving a 10 to 15 year prison sentence. But I'm encouraged because, you know, he's very smart and he's gone, you know, doing school and getting a college degree and working on, you know, understanding why he's there. And he's exactly where he belongs because he needs that structured environment. And this may be the thing that saved him.
Well, I'm sorry to hear what happened to him. And obviously it's because others took advantage of the fact that he isn't adept at picking up on social cues and who's lying to him, who's telling him the truth, because they're, you know, what I have found is many on the autism spectrum are so honest, they're blatantly honest, and they're trusting, and they don't understand that someone who calls themselves a friend is actually manipulating them.
Right.
And that's a sad thing. And he probably, you know, ended up where he ended up based upon someone else's bad acts and not his own, and just trusting and going along with, you know, his friends.
So tell us the premise of the movie now, without giving away any of the major.
So Tyson's Run is a story about a 15-year-old boy who wants to help heal the rift between his mother and father. And he believes the way to do that is to become a champion. And the reason he thinks about it in those terms is because his father was a football champion, and his father is the winningest football coach in the state of Georgia. This is, of course, fiction, but in the state of Georgia, one of the winningest football coaches in the country. And so he and his father, you know, don't have a strong connection because the father has never accepted the fact that he has, quote unquote, this type of son, a son that he can't vicariously live through, live out his dreams through, because the father's career was cut short through a bad knee injury in a bowl game in college. So this boy feels that there's a strain in the family, and he thinks it might be because of him, not so much his fault, but because of him. And through his autistic mind, he sees a simple solution. And that solution is, if I become a champion, my father will feel better about me, and therefore better about my mother, and better about the family, and we will be made whole. And so that's sort of his thinking on that. And he's not going to be deterred from his mission to make his family whole.
Sounds like a great story.
Absolutely. What has been the feedback so far of people screening the film? What do you think?
The feedback has been tremendous. We've gotten endorsements from many of the special needs community, many of the faith community, because it is a film of faith. It's a film of belief. It's a film of forgiveness and love. So those are universal themes, but sometimes they are lacking in certain other stories. And I'd like to share one particular story with you. When we test screened the film in Texas, in Houston, at the end of the screening, the test screening, and this was before the film was you know, fully realized, but it was good enough to gauge an audience's experience when they watched it. And there was a father with a daughter who was maybe 14 or 15 years old with Down syndrome. And he was in the lobby, and he ushered his daughter into the ladies' room. And then he knew I had made the film because I had been introduced at the end of the screening. And he walked over to me and he said, I'd like to shake your hand and thank you for making that film. He said, watching it makes me understand that I need to be a better father to my daughter. And I just want to thank you for that. And he hugged me and then cried all the time. And
wow, this doesn't get any better than that.
It does not. And I was so powerful. And I thought, if that little girl's life changes for the better for, you know, my partner, John Capetta, who runs Planet Nine Productions, green lighting this movie, then we will have done some good service to this world. That's what I thought at that moment.
Absolutely. And when is the film out? Is it out yet? Ready to go?
Today's the day. It opens today nationwide.
Right.
So, and I'm hoping that folks go out and support it. We're across the country in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of theaters. And we're hoping that folks go on out and find this film in their local theaters, and they will not be disappointed. I think they're going to leave inspired and feel as if they, you know, watched a family go through something that many families go through and come out the other side in a way that can inspire at least conversation. And my hope is that the takeaway is we all need to be a little more inclusive, a little more loving, a little more understanding to our fellow human beings, whether they be in this country, this in your particular neighborhood, or halfway across the world.
All right.
My wife and I go to the movies every week. We'll check it out. We should bring our tissues with us.
Well, let's just say this. If I've done my job right, and there are those who say that I have, you are going to laugh, you're going to cry, and then at the end, you're probably going to clap.
That's Tyson's Run. Got it.
Yeah. So Dave. Dave is a caregiver, and he has a question. I think the relationship of what you're doing with the autism community is fantastic. But go ahead, Dave, with your question.
Yeah, so my wife had a stroke 25 years ago in the middle of our marriage. We've married 47 years, just out of nowhere. And, you know, it threw us for a loop for a couple of years, a grief process. Finally, we reinvented ourselves. I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. Been on 52 TV shows, speaking on stages like Harvard and NASDAQ, Carnegie Hall, all over the country. And my wife reinvented herself. You know, she lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. So she decided she's going to do everything she did before. She's a gourmet cook. She's an interior decorator. I mean, just a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. And so I've been talking to people because 30% of caregivers die before their loved ones do just from the stress. And so my mission is to help other people prepare for this. I wasn't prepared. You know, everyone is going to be either a caregiver or they're going to need a caregiver. Right. So it's inevitable. My question to you is, has caregiving touched your life? Special needs is certainly a huge caregiving area. And you're telling the story. Good for you. What personal experience do you have?
Wow, that's a great question, and I love the way you summed it up. We are absolutely either going to need care or we're going to have to give care. And to be a little bit personal, I and my lovely lady, we've just returned from the East Coast where we spent 6 months giving care to my mother, who is in her
mid-80s, for you.
Who had extensive cancer surgery. And I also have a sister who has multiple sclerosis and is completely... she's completely disabled and
required
24-hour care. So we were able to spend the last 6 months helping my other siblings give care to those in our family. But we grew up knowing about that. Our father had an adult care home. That was his business. So he had a building full of people who needed to be cared for. And that was the one thing my father, he had a big heart. And he had a good business sense, but he had a big heart and he put all of those people first. And so I saw it on a daily basis that people need care and they need those around them who, you know, have it in their hearts to do well by them because people can be so easily discarded, you know? And so I have a long history of caregiving in my family. So I appreciate
good for you.
I appreciate what you're doing for your wife, and you said, what did you say, a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman?
And Wonder Woman.
And that's a terrific thing. And that means that you make the adjustment, but you don't hold her back. Let her flourish. Let her fly as high as, you know, her wings will allow her to fly, even though they're different wings than she had before.
Yeah, I don't treat her as disabled. You know, her mother would always say, oh, no, let me get that for you. She says, no, let her get it. You're going to create an invalid. I'm going to create an independent person.
Right. That's right. She might have challenges, but that we all have challenges. It might be a little harder for her to reach something, but sometimes it's harder for somebody over to bend over and reach something.
So right.
You're right. You don't, you love them, you support people, but you certainly don't coddle them to the point where they just sit and everything is done for them, because that's, in my opinion, is a disservice. Let them go. And that's the theme of Tyson's Run. Allow every person to be the best person they can be, to fulfill their dreams to the best of their ability without prejudice, without barricades being put in front of them, whether they're barricades put up by loved ones thinking I'll keep them from hurting themselves.
Right.
That doesn't make sense too. So let them go.
Yeah.
Be there to catch them if they fall.
And that's what I believe prison is doing for my grandson. He's going to come out a much better person, perhaps getting in prison, but he couldn't get it home from his parents. because, you know, it takes patience to be a parent to a special needs kid, and love, and you got to just, you know, have that mindset. And, you know, it really wasn't there.
It's a good story that sometimes doesn't work out in prison. Military could be one way as well. So, Kim, yeah, again, the movie is out in theaters across the country. Is the website the best place to find out where it's playing, or just to search Tyson's Run on Google? What's your take?
Well, you can go to Tyson's Run, TysonRun.com. TysonsRun.com, and then that will link you to the nearest theater to your own particular city or your home or your neighborhood. Or you can just Google it, Tyson's Run movie.
And we're spelling Tyson how?
Tyson's, T-Y-S-O-N-S, Run.
Apostrophe S, right, apostrophe, Tyson's, yeah. Run.
Or, but in their website would be TysonsRun.com.
Right, TysonsRun.com, that's exactly, yeah, right. And that will tell you everything you need to know about the picture, and it will tell you where you can find it. And I really hope people support the film. And it's not about putting money, you know, back in someone's pocket. It's about being able to make other movies so we can tell, you know, other, right, good stories. And
that's great.
You know, be able,
you
to
know, I wonder if Mike Tyson is on the autism spectrum. I never,
Dave,
considered that.
Okay.
I don't know, Dave. Comedy. That's probably another interview, but
just that interview. And see, he probably has met Mike Tyson. I bet you have, Kim, right? Have you ever met Mike Tyson?
No, I've never met him, but I remember on In Living Color, we did a sketch about,
yes,
him.
I remember it.
We did. And we checked with him, and he thought it was funny because, you know, nobody wanted to be Tyson.
So you had to reach out in that thing. So other projects going on right now, Kim? I know this is your baby right now, this movie. But do you have anything else going on that you want to tell your fans?
Absolutely. So this is the one right now, but we expect to be in theaters in either August or beginning of September with a new film called Head Shop, which is completely different than this film. It will also open nationwide. And it's a wonderful story. It's kind of an urban setting fairy tale. And so that's coming out. It's in post-production. We're just finishing it up right now. So they'll be able to see that in theaters, hopefully, just 4 or 5 or 6 months from now. And developing several other projects. One we hope to shoot maybe this year, called Mother Johnson's Miracle Christmas. And it's a wonderful Christmas story. And then to go opposite of that, there's a campy horror thriller called A Lawyer, The Devil, Three Priests, and a Nun, which is close to being greenlit as well.
Oh, you got a lot going. That's great. And we appreciate you, Kim, coming on the show. Thanks again, Dave. And again, this was the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment on The Neil Haley Show. Guys, take care.